Hi, this is Jeanette Creemore, or you may know me as JC. Welcome to Laugh, Learn, Lead, a podcast show that helps project sponsors, project managers and their teams shape their project success stories. I'll be sharing interviews that bring a different perspective to what project success looks and feels like, as well as unpacking our conversations to provide insights and practical tips. Stay tuned and enjoy. Hi, listeners. In today's episode, I'm with Greg Hill, a technology leader who has held many IT-based roles across a wide range of industries, including finance, manufacturing, retail, and more recently, higher education. He's mostly worked for businesses that have adopted SAP as their core ERP solution. His working experience in the industry and his background in finance, Greg has often worked alongside business executives to help them deliver their strategies through the use of appropriate business applications and architecture. Recently, he started his own consulting firm, and he's working with companies to help them realize the benefits and the challenges that lie ahead transforming to cloud-based platforms. Greg can often be found presenting at user groups and conferences around the country, or delivering industry-based lectures to students, presenting the lessons he learnt while working in businesses that were on the leading edge of cloud technologies. He's passionate about the human side of these expansive transformational programs, along with the ever-increasing challenge of improving overall user experience. Today, we talk about his attraction to A-type jobs, a recent project and why it was successful, the challenges organizations are facing with ERP implementations, what he looks for in a program or project manager, and what excites him about the future. Hi, Greg, and thanks for your time today.
Thanks, Jeanette. Nice to be here.
Yeah, I met you when I was at La Trobe Uni, and but I actually don't know much about you pre-La Trobe. Can you share with the listeners a little bit about your career journey and where you are today?
Yeah, sure, I can do that. I started my journey actually as an accountant of all roles. I started being my career, so I was actually on the business side. A lot of the companies that I worked for worked in a company called ICI, which we all know now as Orica, originally back in the day. And they had a SAP implementation coming up towards the end of my career, and I started to be exposed to the world of ERP and became interested in computers and ERP and all things software. And so I started my journey towards an IT-related role, but obviously staying very close to the business. Ever since then, most of the companies that I've been working for have been customers of SAP in one form or another. My general focus is on applications, applications development, implementation, support, and running the various teams that support the apps of a business. And we're talking about some companies that have, you know, a small smattering of apps up to some businesses like La Trobe having about 400 plus applications. So that's the space I'm playing in at the moment.
So accountant, what?
Yes. Don't hold that against me, all right?
Oh, not now, but so at school, were you interested in maths or what got you into accounting from school?
No, that was the last thing on my mind when at school. It was just something that I fell into. Numbers just seemed to make sense to me. It was interesting because when I was a kid, I remember every career that I wanted to get into started with the letter A. So originally, I started out, I wanted to be an architect. I liked the drawing and everything like that. Then gave that up. And then a friend of mine, his dad was an air traffic controller. And I thought that would be fantastic, standing on top of the tower watching all these planes going off. And then I dropped that, and then I turned to accountancy. So every time I had thought of a career, it always started with the letter A. So I end up with accounting, and then I jumped to the letter I and end up in IT.
Or A for applications.
There you go.
Hey,
you win the prize for that one. Exactly.
So my question is, did astronaut ever jump up and go, here I am?
Yeah, no. No. Airline pilot, actually, I think there was one of those. I think I wanted to be – I love planes, by the way. That's a little bit of a side thing. So I quite like – I prefer seeing the planes, you know, and watching them and everything like that. But, yeah, that's that's sort of how I got into it. And I think that was more of an influence from a family member of mine than anything else to get into accounting. But I was definitely on the business side of a few companies before the boom of IT started off, and we started getting computers into the organisations, and I had a really interest in that. And then it was from then on, it was less about the hardware and it was more around the software. And so therefore, I've sort of fell into the application space. More focused on SAP than anything else.
Yeah. So when you fell into that space, were you hands-on development, or you've always been that leadership role and in supporting a team of people to get things done?
No, I actually started my SAP journey doing what we call the configuration of the system. So configuration and business analyst. So I was a BA for quite a while in a few companies. So you're not doing the coding. I tried coding once, and trust me, you don't want me to code your programs for you. That's the last thing you want me to do. I struggle enough trying to get to use computers, let alone writing on the code to actually get the computers to do what they're supposed to do. I fell into that space quite easily. I found that by being a business person on one side and having a bit of a flair for the IT on the other side, I sort of put myself in the middle as the liaison between the IT and the business. So configuring SAP, business analyst, project manager, moving up into management, IT manager, and then finally, my last role was as a director in ICT, working at La Trobe, which is where I met you.
Yeah. Well, before we move on to where you're doing now, fun fact, SAP 3.1H. That was my first ever version of experience of SAP in Queensland government. And I know about the configuration because when I was asked to come from the district to head office in Brisbane to do the testing for the materials management module, the MM module. It only took me 2 hours to break it because they hadn't thought about real life configuration data like under and oversupply. So it did two-way matching very well, but I said, we don't do two-way matching, we do under and oversupplies. But anyway, that's a whole nother story. But yeah, so, interesting.
Congratulations. I'm sure you're one of many people who have gone out and tried to break the system very quickly.
Yeah, apparently that was a record, 2 hours. But I not only rescue projects, I can break them as well.
Well, it gives support people something to do, doesn't it?
Yeah. So you've taken a real interesting step. You left La Trobe recently because you're out on your own. So Greg, the consultant, Greg Hill, the problem solver, what are you doing now?
I'm pulling my hair out. If I look back at my career, I'd been always on the customer side. I'd been at around 6 or 7 companies, large companies that had used SAP, been involved in a lot of projects, upgrades, implementations, a lot of change in that area. Got to know a lot of people. Spent the last few years doing some lecturing at La Trobe and at some other institutions as well, helping out with the user groups and starting to talk about my experiences as well, and sort of helping out with the community and user groups. And I just felt that I was due for a bit of a change. I'd been at the university for around 6.5 years. We did a lot in that time. There was a lot of transformation that went on when I was there at La Trobe, and I just felt it was time for a change. So after talking to a few mentors that I had and a few of my peers, I decided that I would take the plunge. And it was an idea that I started having late last year, and it started to turn into reality early this year. And at the end of March, I left La Trobe after around 6.5 years, as I said, on very good terms. And now I'm out on my own, trying to build up my own consultancy business now.
And so I know you are specialising in ERP, and I'm going to ask you some more questions about that later on. So of all your experiences in projects, I'm sure there's a highlight, and there's definitely some interesting ones. What's one that you think, that was a real success, and why was it success for you?
Yeah, a lot of people who have been in my presentations over the last few years will know that, and especially those in the SAP industry will know that La Trobe was a little bit on the cutting edge of technology when it came to its relationship with some of its vendors, especially with SAP. And the standout project for me was what we when we first moved the entire finance system to the cloud version of SAP. The reason that one stuck out in my mind was because we were their first customer in the world to do that. And when you are a first-off customer to do something like that, not only is it challenging, but it can also be rewarding at the same time to know that you've done something that no one else has done. You put a lot of effort in. You work a lot of hours, a lot of weekends. You burn the team out, unfortunately, at times. But at the end of the day, once it's done, you literally can sort of look back and say, you know what, that was a real good milestone in the career.
Wow. First time. That's definitely a greenfield experiment, really, being the first one. Oh, geez. I'm not going to.
We took one for the team, that's for sure.
Absolutely. Yeah. So it was success for La Trobe. Look, and I know for my time at La Trobe, and I think I kicked off the planning for the SAP HANA Cloud migration for the BI and then handed it back to the SAP Sudhakar, I think, was the PM, and he completed the implementation. But why was it a success for La Trobe? You know, that's a big risk-taking move for them to take that on. So why was it a success in the eyes of yourself and La Trobe to take on something for the first time?
Back then, I mean, planning for that started, I would say, probably around 2013, 2014. I joined La Trobe in around 2012. And the thoughts of the management team and of university at that stage was that, you know, it was time to do something a bit different, to try to get ahead of the game, try to get obviously, the higher education market is very competitive, and so you will try to do what you can to try and get your name ahead of everybody else. And ICT in La Trobe at that time was going through a huge change, quite a large change. It was the infancy of cloud, so I think cloud was, you know, as a marketing term, was only being used around, you know, 2013, 2014, maybe. I may be wrong, but I think it was around that time that word started to come into the language of people. And it was an opportunity that presented itself to leapfrog other people in the SAP market. And of course, when you do that, then you take the name of the business, in this case La Trobe University, along with that as well, and get the accolades for that as well. So it was the first of many big changes that happened at La Trobe. And, you know, I was fortunate enough to be a part of that, of all that change. And they were quite willing to, at that time, to sort of take the risk to reap the benefits of it and move forward. And, you know, we had partnered with quite a few vendors after we did that one with SAP to move pretty much all their tier one software to some type of cloud offering, which is very ambitious for a university at that time.
Yeah, very much so. Wow. Yeah. So you are an ERP specialist, I know that. And so you spend a lot of time with organizations helping them from strategy through to delivery. What's some of the challenges that they're experiencing at the moment as they face their ERP implementations?
I think it's interesting working with some of my customers at the moment, but also getting up and talking on stage and getting the feedback from people. I feel that there are some themes going around the market at the moment. Obviously, there's companies. Some companies have been successful at moving their operations to cloud-based systems. Some haven't been so successful. But I think, for the most part, I sort of gather that CIOs, CEOs, CFOs are sitting back trying to work what the business benefit is from going to these cloud-based platforms. You know, it's the old what's in it for me scenario. And, you know, I think we need to park the technical side of these projects because most of these systems do what they're generally meant to do. Yeah, you've got to do a bit of, you know, maybe you might have to do a bit of configuration or customizing around the side. But I don't think a lot of businesses are understanding the implications of how their business is going to be affected by these changes. And so they're going into it, you know, eyes wide open, we're going to do this. And they're, you know, sort of falling over from time to time. And that could be a range of a number of things. Maybe the planning's not quite right. Maybe it wasn't quite understood what they were going into. And there's also what I sort of will start sort of talking about a lot in my future presentations is the human side of these implementations. So what's the effect on the staff? What's the effect on the people? Roles change a lot when they go to cloud-based platforms. Are we focusing enough on the people who have been doing these jobs for the last 10 or 15 years and realizing that they may feel that maybe their particular specialty is at an end and it's going to be done by a vendor and instead of themselves? So I think the go back to your, I know that's a long-winded answer to a short question, but I think the short answer to your question would be that I think that they're trying to work out what's in it for me? You know, why should I do this and what is my payback on this?
Yeah. I'm finding the same thing too, that we're being caught up in the expectation of others that we have to be digitally transformed, and yet we've been transforming our businesses with technology since the 80s, since I've been involved anyway. And I think to agree with you, the planning in particular is, I think that jumping from A to Z in one leap.
Yeah,
and they get definitely feeling they're getting caught up in a couple of things that when we go through these significant migrations and we're asking a vendor to then take on some of the responsibilities, some of the exposed risk areas that we haven't been taken care of, in particular our data and our reskilling of our people. So, you know, data just becomes an amplified issue in an ERP migration from my experience. And you're totally on the ball with the people. Where have we invested in their reskilling? Where have we invested in what their influence is going to be in the future? And for me, I kind of say a story like we're moving low-value activities to somewhere else so we can actually use your expertise and knowledge of our business in higher value activity. So we're actually giving you time to do, you know, that more tactical stuff. And so, yeah, I'd be keen to hear more about your future presentations, the human side. That'd be interesting. And yeah.
It does resonate a lot with people because we do tend to focus on the technology a lot. What is it, you know, is the technology going to work? And that's important because the system has to work, otherwise the business is going to fall over. However, we have to also remember that we've, like you said, we've invested 10, 15, maybe 20 years in some people. How are they going to see this transformation? How are they going to react to it? Not everyone is adaptable to change as other people are. And so what are we doing to help those people over the line? And in my experiences, I've had some very good success stories with some people who have adapted to that change quite well. But I've also heard of other organisations where sometimes the management has sort of, you know, maybe not proceeded because they've been a little bit concerned around how the staff might take it. So, you know, there is the technical side of it, but I think there is definitely the human side of these transformations that we need to focus on. And yeah, that's going to be a bit of a strong theme for me over the next few years. And that's what I am trying to help businesses to understand is eyes wide open. Let's have a look at everything. There are definitely a lot of themes that come out of these implementations or these transformations that other companies can learn from. And so that's why I thought now would be a, you know, a good time for me to maybe step out on my own and buy a lot of coffee for a lot of people and have a lot of meetings, as you know that you have to do when you're doing a startup. Yeah. Become your own Office 365 administrator and do everything yourself. And so that's the whole premise is high level advisory as well as a bit of community work, because I will be undertaking some more lecturing and student mentoring at La Trobe and at Victoria University. And I've also been doing some lecturing at Chisholm Institute as well. I quite like getting up and speaking to the students about the future of IT. So business and community is really the combination I'm going with.
Sounds great. And I know you'll be doing good work there. I think the students would be just hanging on every word that you say, because I think keeping their eyes wide open that, you know, when they do finish their term and they get their degrees, that the real world may not be as accurate as the textbook suggests.
Yeah, yeah, and they're so attentive. I mean, I get some really good numbers at these presentations, but they hear a lot of the buzzwords. So they hear about RPA and they hear about Internet of Things and they hear about blockchain and they hear about cloud, but they're really understanding, well, hang on, how does that translate into a career? What should I be studying? What's my first job? You know, that real sort of career guidance to get them in there. But, you know, I do find that fun. And at the end of the day, these are the ones that are going to be working in these systems in the next 5, 10, 15 years. I think we owe it to them to actually sort of say to them, okay, let's ease you into it. Let's not just throw everything at you. Otherwise, it would be just too damn confusing for them.
Yeah, and I think that's a tip that some of the organisations can take from you too, Greg, is that in their own business, where they got their graduates, where do they have their own students, how are they helping their more experienced staff become a student again, you know, help them transform into a potentially a new world, and also give opportunities for them to have a career change. Yeah, because I always start talking about the end, you know, the end in mind. What does it look, smell and feel like when this transformation is finished, you know? Do we have 100 people standing up around a desk, or do we have them, you know, on the beach with their laptops and they're working from anywhere, anytime, or, you know, what's that? And I think organisations struggle with painting that blueprint and really being specific around that vision. I think they can say the words, but they struggle at how to then translate that into a real tangible moment. And so, yeah.
Yeah, you definitely have to have more of a view to what the end game is going to be now, rather than just sort of going into it. But, you know, it's if done properly, it can be done very, very well indeed. And I think that's, you know, by someone who has been fortunate enough to be in an organisation who was very proactive at going for that change and moving to cloud-based operations, you know, I think it's a good time to actually educate others on what to do and what not to do as well, so that it is successful at the end.
Agree. So I know to get the job done, you've had to recruit a fair few people over your career journey.
Yes.
Can you share with us, what do you look for in a project or program project manager type role to have confidence that they can get the job done for you? Because as a sponsor, you know, an executive in an organisation, you really can't be hands-on. You have to create the environment for them. But so who do you look for to say, they're going to do it for me?
Yeah, hiring is it's an interesting task when you're when you're working in a large organisation. You know, first off, you start off with the flood of resumes that you get from everyone who can help you, and then honing it down. And then obviously, you know, I always believe that when you meet someone for the first 5-10 minutes, I think that's a good indication as to you have a bit of a gut feel as to whether you're going to take this further or not, is my personal take on things. And even myself, you know, I'll get caught up in the hiring, hopefully if my business starts to grow, I might be able to put some people on as well. But when it comes to project skills, which is what you wanted to focus on, and I wrote a little bit of a list to go by, and I kept on coming back to the same word time and time again about what do I see in in a good hire, and that is communication. And I think communication is definitely the key when it comes to a lot of these roles, because they are not only engaging with, you know, developers or business analysts or the people in their team, testers, but they're also communicating with the C-level staff of organizations, with the CIOs, the CFOs, CEOs, CIOs, and CFOs. There you go, I got that out. And I think communication is an important part. And it's something that I felt that I've always had to be on the top of my game at doing by being in their shoes. Because, you know, when I was a business analyst or a project manager, you know, one minute I would be down on the shop floor talking to manufacturing workers and one minute, and then the next minute I have to change and wash up and go up to the offices and be in the CEO's office. And so therefore you have to be quite adaptable and you have to be good at communicating. So I would put communication as probably the top skill, and adaptable to the organization that you're working within, because even though we all follow similar hierarchies, you know, at the end of the day, every business is different. I've been in higher ed, I've been in retail, I've been in FMCG, manufacturing. You really need to be adaptable to be across those industries. And I know a lot of PMs who do project management as a career will move from industry to industry all the time. And so you need to be adaptable, I think. I'd say they were my two top two things that I look for in project managers.
And that's hard to sell in a resume, isn't it? And it's
yes.
Yeah. And for me, I know I really would love to, you know, find a way that we can actually shortlist our talent or our potential candidates easier. You know, is it a video? Is it a video submission of how they perform? Because reading, I struggle with reading CVs, and I'm like you, within about 5 minutes of me having a conversation with someone over coffee or whatever, I know if they're going to be right for the space that you're recruiting them for, that they might be awesome in one area, but they're just not right for this role. They might be better for a different role. So I call it square peg, round hole. And just because Johnny did a great project, you know, role last time, maybe he's not the right one this time, because it's got different context or it's got different stakeholder groups. And I love the fact that you said adaptability, because it is. It's if you think you're a project manager that sits at a desk and just does risk and issue registers and status reports, you're probably not a project manager for the future.
No, not at all. You're more a coordinator probably, or someone like that. But I think that, there's been a lot of banter on LinkedIn, I noticed, of late around, you know, video resumes and video interviews and everything like that. I can see that sort of taking on, because at the end of the day, we're still humans and we still like that human interaction. We like to face each other and talk to each other, whether it's over a screen or whether it's in person. You can write till the cows come home on a resume everything you've done. And, you know, very rarely have I come across a resume where someone's put a skill down and then they've lied about it, because you can get found out pretty easily these days over technical stuff. But when it comes to the human interaction, senior right down to junior level engagement, that's something you can't put on a piece of paper. You can say you've done it, but you can't say how good you are by putting it on a piece of paper.
Agree. And yeah, and that's why I kind of ask people like yourself that is experienced, you know, what are you looking for? Because I'm working with some project managers now, and I talk a lot about self-awareness and that your self-awareness will really guide you to the right role. Like, don't always assume the type of role that you're after is really the right one for you now, because who you are now is going to be different than who you were yesterday. But it's also what legacy you want to leave behind, because I think projects are a wonderful space to leave your mark, and whatever that mark is, what the organisation needs. And it might be, yeah, they're struggling definitely in communication, but they might be struggling in identifying their next level of talent. So you're going, okay, well, give me two people in the project that I can coach in my project manager role, because I really – and I know I sat next to Danielle at La Trobe, and, you know, she was just asking for coaching tips all the time. I want to learn. I want to be better. And so you've got project managers out there that want to learn, but they need to be put in an environment where they can make a mistake and not feel, you know, bad, that they can get better at their communication and their adaptability is what you're, the two that you've called out.
Yeah, let me pick up that point a little bit about, you know, being able to make a mistake and feeling bad and all that. It's, you know, one of the things that I look for in a PM is that I don't want to go to a steering committee meeting and be surprised. I like to know what's about to happen. And I think too many times I've been to steercoms and I've been surprised at some of the words that have come out. And I think that the PMs need to lean on the executive team to make sure that there are no surprises, and you rock up to these steercoms with a view of what you want to get out of the steering committee members. It's not just an update session. And if things go wrong, you've got to face it. You've got to admit that, yeah, this has not gone right. Now I need your help to do this. Otherwise, we'll forever turn the program manager into a bit of a whipping tool, and that's not the way to do it. And I think on the other hand, you know, as steering committee members, and I've been on many, many steering committees in multiple organisations, is, you know, we need to support that PM, not use them as the catalyst to let out our grievances.
Mm, totally. And, yeah, I know that all my success stories have been because I've had a great relationship with my project sponsor, my executive that's got my back, that has the agenda, and we're clear. And yeah, and I think I talk about that in last week's Unpack or something. I talked about the relationship project manager and project sponsor, because I think it's just one role, you know, one relationship. The communication has to be so transparent and so clear that there are no surprises. I agree with you.
Yeah, exactly. It's almost got to be a formality that you rock up. You know, everything's going okay. Here's the, are we in, you know, red, amber or green? If we're in red, what can we do for you? Yeah. If we're amber, like, this is what we're doing to try and fix it. If we're green, well, everything's green. How do we stop it? How do we prevent it from not turning another colour? You know, how do we keep it green type thing?
Yeah.
These are the type of things. But, you know, going back to the start of this discussion, and that's why I said, you know, communication and adaptability when it comes to project managers is quite important, because one minute they may be running a project in a, you know, a factory-based environment or something like that, and the next thing it might be all, you know, C-level staff. So they've got to be very adaptable at what they do, especially if you're in the consultancy game of project management.
Mm, yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, so it'd be good to watch the space if the whole video or another way of identifying good communicators is different than the traditional CV. But I think also it's about referrals. I think that I know the work that I get on, no doubt the work you get, is because someone knows us. They've already seen us, you know, on the platform, or they've seen us, you know, washing the dishes, or presenting. You know, they've seen that we have got that communication adaptability. So, I think referrals will become a way of the future rather than the traditional applying for the role. I don't know. I just know that we have to do something different than what we're doing now.
I am very good at doing the dishes and making cups of coffee as well. For anyone that's out there that wants my services.
I know, an expensive cup of coffee, but, you know, you're a good listener as well, Greg.
I try.
Actually, Greg, I haven't asked people this before, so I might ask you if you don't mind. When I first met you at La Trobe, I don't know where it was, but I know that when I started there on the day, I was to be given a project, but they said to me, oh, we've got another project that we think you're better suited for. Can you pick it up? And I don't know if you were in the room that day, and it was the LMS migration to the cloud.
Yeah, migration to cloud, yeah. I quite possibly was. And that's not an unusual thing that I found in businesses. In fact, I've often been found guilty of doing it myself, is that if we're running an organisation such as La Trobe or another company where there's multiple projects, it's not uncommon if you interview for a project manager, they may not be quite cutting it for that actual project that you were thinking of, but they may fit some other project that is going on or about to come on, and you actually move them over and you say, well, actually, you interview very well, but we've actually got another project in mind. So that wouldn't be the first time that I've been involved in something like that. And again, it's because you meet somebody, you talk to them, you understand what they like, and in the back of your mind, you're thinking, hang on, I've got this project that's maybe a little bit out of control or it's coming up. You'd be really suited for this. And again, that's where it comes down to, the personality, the communication, the adaptability. These are all important personal traits rather than just a cookie cutter PM.
Thanks. I can't remember the exact moment that we met, but I'm sure you must have been in that room that day, my first day.
I thought you were going to ask for a performance review just now or something.
Oh, no.
The first performance review on a podcast. That could be interesting.
We could try that. We could test that one out. So you've been ERPs, SAP, the human side of transformation. Mm-hmm. So what excites you about the future, Greg? There is so much technology change happening, and there's organizations trying to adapt and say, well, what's working for me and what excites you about the future? Because there's so much out there.
That's a very broad question, and there's so many answers that are flicking around my head at the moment. And I get it, that is in, it's actually interesting because I've actually been asked that question a couple of times by, believe it or not, students. When I've gone to lecturing, which is, what do you see in the future? And obviously they're thinking of careers because they're trying to pick, you know, where am I going to place my career and everything. But then I got onto this bandwagon where I keep going on and saying, right, so what's exciting is that over the next, you know, maybe 5 years or so, we're going to see a lot of companies move to cloud-based operations or you know, uplifting a lot of their applications. There's a lot underway at the moment. We know a lot of the large companies are. And of course, there'll be, you know, companies that will still stick with wanting to do stuff on premise. But I think for the most part, a lot of these cloud operations or cloud providers will hit their straps very well. And they already are. A lot of companies out there doing it. I think the exciting part for me is what do businesses then do? Once they've moved their operations, how do they then tackle some of the big problems that they haven't been able to tackle before because they haven't either had the horsepower, the hardware, or the, you know, the investment, the funding in order to further expand their horizons? If you take a lot of the hosting companies that are out there like Amazon and Azure with Microsoft, the amount of computing power you can get these days is phenomenal, and you can turn it on and turn it off if you like. You can spin servers up, you can spin servers down. And I know that you could always do that in businesses, but you take it to the nth degree when you actually start talking about these companies because they've invested billions and billions of dollars in this hardware. So how can companies tap into that information and use those resources? And then you start to add on other things like Internet of Things. You know, I was, I'm always seeing stories about companies who've always made a product. You know, I saw one recently around, you know, vacuum cleaners, you know, those automated vacuum cleaners that go around the house.
Yeah, the kids are now standing on as a, the kids are standing on as a bit of a toy now to get a joyride around the lounge room.
Well, I read somewhere, and I can't exactly where I can't credit this, but you know, they were talking about, you know, taking a lot of that information around what these vacuum cleaners are doing around the house and how efficient they are, and you know, putting it into their cloud operations and doing analytics on it and cutting it and slicing it to get better ideas for the future. There's a lot of information out there that we're getting now that we didn't have prior. How are companies going to take advantage of that? That's one of the things that really sort of excites me a lot, because items that we've always taken for granted, for example, our cars, our cleaners, our washing machines. I mean, you know, there's even fridges that you can remote control your TV off now when you're in the kitchen. You know, if you want the kids to come for dinner, I've seen the ad on TV. I think it's Samsung. I'm not sure. But it's those types of things that I think are quite exciting, which is using a lot of the horsepower that's out there to make better decisions, to make better products and services to the public. How companies can actually take advantage of that. I mean, even I think, you know, Tesla, you know, the car with their cars, mm-hmm. they can actually do over the wire, you know, upgrades to their cars. I mean, yeah, if you'd said that 20 years ago, you would have been thinking you were tripping out on drugs or something like that.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Now, it has its upsides and its downsides, of course. You know, some people will like it, some people won't like it. But I think it's that type of – I think it gives the platform to businesses to expand into areas that they've not been able to previously invest in before. And I think that's probably, you know, my answer to what's exciting me about the future. So I think we'll go through, you know, maybe another 5 years of transformation, but I think after that companies will start to bed it down. Then what's next? That's I think that's the exciting part.
Yeah, the what next. Love that. Love that. Well, thank you so much for today, Greg. I have missed our conversations and, I really, really appreciate your time, and I'm looking forward to hearing more about the human side of your lectures at the universities and some of your stage guest speaking. I think you're heading to Sydney in August, are you?
Yes. Yep. The SAP user group up in Sydney, late August. Yeah. I'll be there doing a few things, getting involved in that, which is always a good time. Good networking session. And hopefully the weather might be a little bit better than down here in Melbourne at the moment.
Yeah.
Going from what I saw on the football on the weekend, I think it definitely will be.
I'll share your contact details when I publish this. And so, people can follow you on LinkedIn, I think would be the best place to start with it.
LinkedIn is the best place for me.
Yeah, send you a message or something if they want to talk more ERP or the human side, I think, of ERP. Thanks, Greg. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Janet. Appreciate it.
Thank you for listening, and I hope you have a few ideas to take action. I would love for you to rate and review the show. I too need feedback to learn. Cheers for now. Remember, a day without laughter is a day wasted.